Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life.
I don't think St. Patrick was Romanian, so I'm not sure why you would want to celebrate St. Patrick's Day with Andrew Tate. I don't know. It just seems weird. Welcome to the Gravity Commons Podcast. My name is Matt Tebbe, and I'm here with Christy Pinley and Ben Sternke.
Hey, hey.
Hello.
Hey. You know what? The listener who listens to all of our podcasts will remember that we did a little pre-Christmas gift opening extravaganza where for a while we kept up the ruse that Ben and I were watching Christy open the gift we had sent her, but then finally Christy's conscience, which is, you know, much more pure than ours, got to her and she had to give up that we actually hadn't sent her a gift.
Nothing.
But today, listener,
truly sad.
We are vindicated because here on the precipice of St. Patrick's Day, we Christy's gift finally arrived.
We've totally redeemed ourselves.
Christmas in March. It's a new thing.
Yeah. So
okay, so I had the package. Listener, I'm not lying this time.
There
okay.
it is.
So I'm
but
gonna
can I just
open
say,
it.
Can I just say that there's something in there that is that made the envelope more of a package. And so one of the reasons why I got delayed, it sat at the post office for a month and then got sent back to me. And then we put that old package in a box and sent the whole thing to you.
Oh my word. Okay. So anyway. Here's another package.
Well, that's the package I'm telling you about.
Yeah.
Doesn't that look at the front of that sucker.
Super, it's been gone through a war. That's for sure.
It's been through the United States Post Office.
Okay, I'm gonna open it. Here we go. Right. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. First thing I'm pulling out, 3D Michigan coasters. Yeah. Come on.
Mm. Look at that.
I'm believing that this next season, 2025-26, is going to be great for Michigan.
Believe on it.
I mean, you
testify.
Know, that's my hope.
Well, you got some 3D coasters now.
Thank you.
That's fun.
Okay. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Cranberry pine. It is going to be Christmas in March.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Come on,
it's a candle. Yeah. Right. You got to love Trader Joe's candle.
Hey, before you open more gifts, listener, you know, on Christmas morning, there's usually one spouse that buys all the presents for the kids and then tells the other spouse what was bought. And then the other spouse kind of forgets. And so it's like just a surprise as the kids when the presents are opened. I'm not saying that happened here, but I am saying maybe Ben should guess the next present.
Yeah.
Ben, any idea what's in this package?
Yeah.
Ben, here
let's see.
Look at this.
Okay. Yeah. So, I think it's I can't even tell what it is. Is that
chapstick.
Lip balm?
Chapstick? Mango chapstick.
Mango chapstick. Mm-hmm. It's a very fruity presence. Yeah.
Mm, smells good. Yeah. And, yep.
It's on.
I just put it on.
Put it on.
Thank
see if
you.
It works.
Yes.
Well.
Okay. And, come on, some Christmas earrings.
Oh, that's
it's
fun.
Gonna be Christmas in March, you guys.
Yeah, you wear them today.
What if I wore them today?
Your kids would be like, "Mom, are you feeling
What's
okay?"
What's going on? Yeah.
And then I have an Apple $25 gift card, you guys.
Oh,
thank you.
You're welcome.
It's amazing. Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Merry Christmas to you, Christy.
Yep.
Thank you, guys.
And that we actually opened a gift that time. There was no fibs.
No fibs.
A true gift. Yeah. I do think we totally redeemed ourselves.
So. You did. You totally yeah. did. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Good work, everybody. We did.
Well, I'm excited about this interview that we have today.
Yeah. With Dr. Yeah. Why are you excited?
Well, I'm excited because I really respect her and I really like her writing that she's done before and I've read them all. And so this one's on marriage. So who are we talking to, Matt?
This is actually, Christy, this is not, we just interviewed.
Oh, you guys,
Sheila
we
Gregoire.
Did. I'm totally yeah. lying.
Yeah,
this should be the intro for her.
Yeah, it should be, but it's not. It's the intro for,
I don't think you were lying.
I think you just had, you know, just had that in your mind. So
yeah. You know. Okay. Well, then it never. So
how about this?
I don't
how
even.
About,
you can't
how about
even
this,
scratch
Christy?
That.
How about this? We don't need to scratch it because you know what? We're trying to model that it's okay
to make mistakes
and to fail in public.
It's totally
fine. Why don't you have that same energy
that
you just had to transition into our conversation with Dr. Andrew Bauman?
Thank you. Okay, so here's the deal. This is the truth. After we did this interview with Andrew, I asked you for the book. True story. So I'm really thankful that we did interview him and we get to talk about his book. Come on.
Look at that, folks. Listener,
in the future, there will be an interview with Sheila Gregoire. Subscribe.
But not right now.
Smash that subscribe button.
Well, it's probably the first time Dr. Andrew Bauman has been confused with Sheila Gregoire. But if you're going to be confused with somebody, she's not bad. We're talking to Dr. Bauman today. He's the founder and director of the Christian Counseling Center for Sexual Health and Trauma and a licensed mental health counselor. He's a former pastor who now works with men and women to bring healing and wholeness to their sexual and spiritual lives. His mission is to use his unique position to elevate women's voices and expose a disease that desperately needs to be removed from the church. What is that disease? I'm glad you asked. We're talking to him about his new book, Safe Church, How to Guard Against Sexism and Abuse in Christian Communities. Let's get into it. Dr. Andrew J. Bauman.
You got it. You did it.
Welcome to Gravity Commons Podcast.
It was such a smooth pronunciation
of
my name.
These podcasts very smoothly.
That's right.
Very smoothly.
Look, there's a reason. There's a reason pros here. Andrew, thanks for abiding with me. I really burned a lot of glucose to get your last name right. So I may need some time to recover in order to focus for this interview.
Fair. Matt's going to take a nap during the interview. So.
I will carry this thing. Don't you worry. You just sit back.
Then if you would pray for me that my prefrontal cortex would not fail.
Yeah.
Andrew, we're talking about your book today about sexism and abuse in the church. But I wonder, by way of introduction, you referenced that you used to be a pastor. I wonder if you could give us a brief account of your spiritual journey and how you came to care so much about this topic.
Yeah. So I was a former pastor. I also had a hidden addiction to pornography for about 13 years. And so slowly realizing that my unhealthy view of women was kind of seeping into degrading views of theology. And this kind of, they became one, my pornified mind kind of seeped in well with me being a youth pastor and a college pastor in the Southern Baptist Church, and realizing more and more how disintegrated I was, just not an embodied person, and realizing the more in ministry I was, the more I felt like an inauthentic man and the less integrity that I had. And so, you know, I was only kind of professional ministry for about a year and a half. And then quickly kind of changed trajectory of my career to become a therapist. And that was, you know, about 20 years ago. And realizing like I had to be more honest with myself because my father was also a pastor. He was a prominent evangelical leader. He also had a hidden life, cheated on my mom for about 20 something years, secret sexuality and, you know, drugs and, you know, the secretness and basically that was when I was 8 years old, kind of blew up my family. It kind of came out that he had the secret life. They were going to, you know, report him to the newspaper. And this is in the '80s. And then he stole money to pay off the briber from he was also a vice president of a Christian college, you know, anyway, everything blew up. So that's my origin story of 8 years old. My mother, just wanted, you know, we listened to Focus on the Family every morning and Rush Limbaugh. And, you know, it was just basically like my mom only wanted to be a good Christian wife. And my father is a narcissist and a spiritual abuser, emotional abuser. And so that was kind of my origin into this. into this world. So both my own personal story deeply impacts this because I was a part of the problem, right? It was a boys club, me and my other, you know, white buddies. I had a blast, you know, in the youth pastor. We were all friends and, you know, had man night this and man night that. And 'cause we had to reach the men and, you know, it was all go hunting together and, you know, it was awesome. And yet it was basically stroking my own ego and not actually doing the work of God, or at least only maybe helping half of the image bearers of God, because the other half was there to serve us sandwiches during our God, you know, God-given directive. And it was just, it was wrong. And so I had to deconstruct, I had to reconstruct, I had to unlearn all these toxic things. And that began of me kind of telling the truth of my story, facing my shame, facing my fears, doing my own therapeutic work, and finally like discovering a deeper purpose. And instead of being an abuser of women, actually being an advocate for them.
I appreciate your honesty and your vulnerability, even in the first few minutes of this. You spent 3 years collecting over, I don't know, 3,000 stories from women about their heartbreak in the church. What surprised you from this research, or what did you hear that you didn't anticipate?
Yeah, that's a great question. So yeah, it was over 2,800 women filled out a questionnaire survey, and these are women that worked in the church. So we had 16% of them had worked 25 years or longer in the church. 25% had worked 16 years or longer, all different denominations, all across the board. Non-denominational was the highest representation. The Baptists were second, and then other kind of random denominations. But we had so much data collected. And I think for me as a man, you know, it was kind of my thought of, I wonder if this is happening. Because in 2018, I read a study called The Elephant in the Valley, and it was about sexism in the Silicon Valley and a male-dominated space. And that got me thinking, well, what about the church? Like, do you know, this is 87% are male-led. Do we have a sexism problem, an abuse problem in the church? And I was kind of thinking, well, probably. But I didn't have any data. So that was kind of the beginning of, I want to start collecting some... you know, some data and listen to women who are on the front lines, because we got to listen to them, to their experience, because previously their experience didn't really matter, at least, you know, in my experience as a pastor. And 82% of women said that they believe sexism plays a role in their church. 82% of over almost 3,000. Like, that's wild.
Yeah.
And then the stories are just like insane. So many stories were collected, and I changed their name, you know, names to, for anonymity, but we'll call it Hannah, worked on a church staff as a worship leader. And she remembers walking up to the church staff joking about how to increase church attendance. And they said, well, we should definitely have the women wear white t-shirts while they get baptized.
Wow.
And the question is, like, what do you think Hannah felt after hearing that? Right? These are people she spiritually trusts. These are friends. These are, what did she feel towards her own body, her own breasts, her own worth? Similarly, Kelly shared, she always has to wear long dresses because she has a big butt, and she feels like, she has to cover that because she didn't want men to lust after. Right. So we can get more into that, but basically women feeling the onus of themselves to cover their bodies because men don't want to take responsibility for their pornified thoughts, for their sexualization and objectification of women, right? One of the more heartbreaking stories was from a woman named Rebecca, and she recalled being a high school student, her and her three sisters. Okay. This is maybe even middle school. It was like, she was 12, 13 ish. They would go to the lake in the summer, and her parents would make her wear a full bodied modesty swimsuit. Okay. So this is turtleneck, long sleeves, everything. Right. And she remembers a family friend, a friend of her father, would come to the lake with them sometimes. And she reports going, the father's friend told the father how much he appreciated going to the lake with their family because he didn't have to worry about lust. Mm. And then the father turned and celebrated the girls. Thank you. Thank you for protecting your brothers in Christ. Right. So that was applauded. What wasn't confronted was, do you know that this so-called friend is potentially a predator? That he is sexualizing adolescent girls?
Right.
Is that being confronted? And so that has to be part of our work, is men's, especially, I believe this is men's work, we can no longer be a bystander to sexism. We can no longer, this is, women have carried this for so long because they've been the one experiencing it. And in a sense, we've been blinded to it because we don't have breasts. We don't get objectified the way women get. Now, do men get objectified? Of course, but not to that level that women get objectified. And so this is pervasive. I don't think I knew how pervasive it was. 62% of women said they wouldn't be surprised if they heard a sexist joke, right? Women in the kitchen, women cleaning, whatever it is, which I grew up hearing that all the time. Women drivers, you know, it's so funny. And what it really is it's not funny at all.
Right.
A study in 2008 by Dr. Thomas Ford found that it's a prejudice releasing function, sexist humor, right? And so, which actually increases tolerance of discrimination, and mm-hmm. sexist humor acts as a releaser of negative attitudes towards women that are already present. So if you hear a sexist joke from the pulpit, you know, there's a fact that your pastor is literally using that to release his negative attitudes towards women. He hates women.
Yeah.
And that's pervasive. And I got, you know, I can bore you with stats all day long now, but I'll let you guys talk.
Yeah. Well, speaking of hating women, I wonder if we could talk terms here a little bit, because I mean, sometimes these things are used interchangeably, and I wonder how you understand these things. And maybe you can distinguish between some of them, like misogyny.
Yes.
Sexism.
Yes.
Abuse, spiritual abuse. Like, how do you distinguish between those things? Help us understand what we're
talking about. So obviously for a real deep dive, you know, definitely read the book and dive into the defining all the terms, because there's all forms of sexism. What I'm talking about, prejudice, discrimination, or stereotyping because of someone's sex. Right. And so there's hostile sexism, benevolent sexism, ambivalent sexism. What we often see is kind of more ambivalent. Right. And it's less kind of in your face sexism. Right. Or it's, you know, benevolent. Whereas, you know, rarely do you see kind of the hostile stuff. The hostile stuff makes the news.
Right.
Right. It's the, you know, some pastors that you see on, you know, TikTok just saying horrific things that just make you cringe. And what abuse is corrupt practice or custom, excessive use, treatment, language that condemns or vilifies unjustly. And the simplest answer is an improper power over versus power shared, right? I think so many times as I'm, you know, diving deeper into this, especially my work with men, so many times we fear like, oh, if we give up power, then women are going to treat us like we treated them, right? And I'm just like, no, we're not talking about just some, you know, feminist liberal trope of women burning bras. We're talking about like shared power here, because we both bear the image of God, and I can know God more fully if I can know women more fully and vice versa. So it's no more power over, but it's power shared and simply misogyny, a hatred of women.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Let's get back to the show.
There's an indictment in that assumption too, right? Like, we can't let them have power because they'll treat us like we're treating them. It's correct. Like you already understand that that's bad.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah. I was having a dinner conversation last night with my son and his girlfriend. He's 16, and his girlfriend, her older sister's having a baby. And she was remarking that in her family and in her husband's family, they have the highest preponderance of red hair. And so they were wondering out loud if the child is going to be a ginger. And we got to talking about the sort of social prejudice against gingers, and in particular against ginger women. And I was reflecting with them that in the 80s, when I grew up, we would make misogynist blonde jokes.
Yes.
And it was usually blonde women.
Yes.
Not usually blonde men. Yes. And it was like one of the few acceptable, yes, like categories of people to demean.
Yes.
And now it seems like gingers get the same thing. And so that's just like an evidence of what you're talking about how we sort of offload these negative stereotypes onto people.
Yes.
That do damage, but we're just not aware of them. And
right.
And I want to call back something you said at the beginning about how your misogyny, your anti-woman views were largely hidden from you.
Yes.
That you didn't choose them or want them.
Yes.
But they existed because you were in a larger social or cultural system that yes. was misogynistic. Could you say more exactly. about how that happens?
So I think of it like a marination, right? So I've been marinated in this stuff forever, right? So it's not that I'm sitting there, and most men, this is why so many men are like, well, no, it's not me. I'm not the abuser. I'm not the one doing it. It's just like, guys, dude, like, it's okay. We're all a part of this problem. Let's do something different. We've been marinating in a system. It's called the socialization of masculinity, right? Women are weak. Emotions are bad. Right. So what happens when men face, you know, in our men's workshops, we have men in our co-ed workshops, we have people face each other 6 inches apart and stare in each other's eyes for like all weekend. Right. And it's like, what are we doing? Like, we are practicing intimacy, right? We're practicing engaging intimacy. What are the only other times men are told to face each other? Well, it's through combat. It's through, you know, UFC or boxing. It's we were socialized that intimacy is wrong. And I remember the slurs that were thrown. You're gay or you're a girl, right? Those are in the early 90s growing up. Like, those are the, in a sense, slurs, yes. dehumanizing entire people groups. And so we learned quickly, we can't be face to face. We have to be side to side. We have to be looking and conquering, hunting, going out and dominating, killing it and dragging it home. We can't be okay with intimacy and connection. And so we've been socialized, you know, to abuse, in a sense, dominate over women, and not actually share power and honor mutuality.
Mm. Mm. It's in our bones. Yes. I mean, that's what I'm hearing you say. It's in our bones. And it's not truly, I can say this because I'm the only woman on here, but truly it's in the bones of men. It's also in the bones of women.
Yes. Correct. Because go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I just was going to say, I think one thing that helps is obviously as women, we have to do our own work, right? In our own stories and go after that junk and weed that out. However, when men go after their junk and then stand up for women and stand up for equality, stand up for like shared power, shared authority, shared responsibility, somehow that gives freedom to me. In a way that a woman couldn't give freedom. Do you yes. agree with that? I mean, that's yes. what I experience.
Yes, because why? And this is why I think it's a man's work, because we've historically held the power.
Yeah.
Right? So it's in the power systems and the power structures. And so many women have internalized the misogyny. Yes. And has internalized the patriarchy, and they believe it. So I get so much criticism from women all the time, you know, and it's just like, what in the world? But it's, they believe it, right? Yeah, they believe it, or they believe the lie that a narcissistic leader, in a sense, protects.
Yeah.
Right? Or is for them. There's almost comfort in this narcissism because they feel like they have it all together, or they feel like they have the answers. And right. so mm-hmm. much of the lie has been, yes, because who has held the power? And if whoever holds the power, they get to create norms and kind of tell you what is true and what is not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a survival mechanism within that system then, right?
Yes.
You know, for women to take this on is like, well, this is how I make my way in this system.
Correct. Know? Yes.
Because it feels very costly
yes.
to oppose it or to speak up against it or to, you know, you get called certain names, you know?
Yes.
Start with B anyway.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I often run into, you talked about getting opposition from women, but I'm sure you also get it from men. And, you know, I often run into this as well. And I feel this, you know what I mean? I understand it because I feel it as well. Like there's a sense of defensiveness sometimes that comes up in me. That's like, well, I'm one of the good ones, you know,
right.
Like not all men or not all pastors or not my pastor, yes. Or, you know, exactly. Like why are you tearing down the church or why are you speaking against the church? A lot of those things get said in response to testimonies of harm. And I wonder how you respond to those kinds of kind of knee-jerk reactions.
Yes. I'm reminded of one of my favorite quotes from the legendary Diane Langberg. Dr. Diane Langberg. And yes. She says this in her book, Redeeming Power. Understand that you cannot single-handedly change an entire system. You are not called to do so, yet we are called to speak truth about our systems. This is difficult to do and sometimes quite risky. Just ask Martin Luther King Jr., ask Martin Luther himself, ask those in the Me Too movement. When systems change, it is often little by little and usually at a great cost. When you feel overwhelmed, remember this. People are sacred, created in the image of God. Systems are not. They are worth the people in them and the people they serve. And the people are to be treated, whether one or many, the way Jesus treated people. And that, my friends, is the answer. And so what is our path forward?
That's a good word.
You know, what is our path? Well, again, systems are not created in the image of God. People are. And our path forward, I truly believe, is to engage women literally just the way Jesus did. Like, let's just try to model our treatment of women in the way Jesus did. Let's just start there. Because literally Jesus is thrown into this, you know, Greek Roman culture that's just rooted in sexist. You know, if you read some of the early Greek thought and early Christian thought, it's just wild how just grotesque it is of dehumanizing women, sexualizing them. Augustine, Thomas Aquinas, I mean, all these legends, right? Just say some of the most horrific, you know, women are a deformed male. And
John Chrysostom.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is where Jesus is, you know, like Jesus is in this patriarchal culture, right? He shows up in it and just completely flips it on its head in this beautiful way. And you can see that, you know, Jesus's mission that he states in Luke 4, right, says, what is his purpose? To set the captives and the prisoners free from society. And who was that? That was women. Like, that was women in that society. Yeah. And, you know, you look at John 4 and the woman at the well, right? You look at the alabaster jar in Luke 7 story, right? The Canaanite woman in Matthew 15. And one of my all-time favorites, obviously, John 20:13, the resurrection, one of the most important, if not the most important, theological truth. He says, Mary, go preach to the world. Like, if that's not, and then I've posted that or something. Somebody, well, she wasn't technically preaching, or it was just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Did my eyes out with a spoon. Like, that was literally like Jesus entrusted the most important truths of the gospel to women to share with the masses.
Yes.
And we should too.
Yeah, Andrew, I'm struck by one of the reasons why people are so spun up, cranked up about the quote, sin of empathy. I don't know if you've heard of this. Is because if you actually take the time to read questionnaires from 2,800 women, they will report to you that your self-understanding of your church and your system is incorrect, right? And so it's an almost an existential crisis, because most pastors that I hear talk, they don't say things like, we despise women and hope they're miserable. They say things like, we love women here. No one values women more than we do.
Oh, yeah.
And the only way that you can continue to believe that is if you don't listen to women.
Yes.
So true. So true. Let's pivot then, because one of the things that you're doing, and many of our listeners probably are endeavoring to do, is advocate for the empowerment and centering of women in our communities, but not being sure how to do that maybe as a man, you know? Yeah. In fact, I've heard it said from some men that it's so hard to be a man right now. Nobody cares what we have to say. Mm. Everybody wants to silence us or cancel us, if you've heard this, right?
Yes.
Can you share a bit about what you've learned about having power and authority, being a doctor as a dude, and attempting to leverage that in an empowering way for women? What have you learned about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's true. Like, yeah, I've been attacked a lot. And I mean, I remember, just recently, you're exploiting women's stories for your own personal gain. How dare you? You know, it's just like, a woman should have written this book. Why? Like, I'm damned either way, right? So I'm damned if I'm a bystander. I'm damned if I speak out. Oh, well. And yet I have to continue to humble myself that it's a small price to pay for the women who've been abused, who've been harmed. Like, I get the privilege to be a target in a sense, right? Like, I get to be a privilege. It's a privilege to be a target to try to do something good. And I'm kind of tired, you know, of this weird pushback. And you get it from both sides, right? I mean, liberals hate me, and because I'm not, you know, liberal enough. And then I'm also way too liberal to be conservative. You know, it's just like, I'm just tired. I just want to help people. I just want to try to speak truth to power. And so we just have to continue to say, yeah, it hurts. You know, reading bad reviews or like, yeah, like I'm a human, and I have to do a lot of self-care. And also, it's not that big a deal. Like, people talking bad about me on the internet, ooh, wow. You know, versus like the thousands and thousands of women who are being abused. One out of three women are sexually abused in their lifetime. Yeah. One out of four are in a domestic violent relationship. How many sermons have you heard about domestic violence? How many sermons have you heard about sexual abuse? Like, I can take a few cheap pot shots on the internet, and most of it is done by just really adolescent people. I'm just like, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. The other thing I think I'm hearing, Andrew, is like, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. A lot of people believe that. And so they kind of throw their hands up and they say, well, F it then.
Yeah. But that's no integrity. Right? So it's well, like, what would you rather be a fool or a coward? And it's like, those are the only two choices that you have. And sadly, many of us choose cowardice because we don't want to be in the crosshairs because it's just easier to be silent. Okay. But if I say something foolish or if I step out and it's like, at least I'm not being a coward.
Right. Right. And that's, I think that's what I want to highlight. I think for people who are so privileged and centered in our culture, white, able-bodied, you know, cisgendered men who are affluent and educated, like this culture was built for us, by us and for us.
Right.
We have two choices. We can make the mistake of not doing anything about that, or we can make the mistake of trying to do something about that and failing.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And what you're saying, and what I want to agree with is, I think it's always the choice of going for it imperfectly.
Yes.
Is the one with integrity. But yes. But what I am picking up from what you're saying, and I'd love for you to comment about this, is two things. I think there's a way that in going for it and failing, we have to reckon with our own aversion to looking wrong, failing, not knowing, getting put in our place by a woman who checks us.
Yes, right. No doubt.
You know, not to like, this is not a woe is me, but the systems and structures in place make that incredibly hard for a white man.
Yes, no doubt. And the cancel culture and you're victim blaming or you're this or you're shaming these abusers. And it's just like, it's all, if you have integrity and you go for it, it's going to constantly push you to do your own healing work.
Mm. Yeah.
constantly.
Yes.
And I, you know, I work with abusive men and deceptive sexuality and integrity abuse disorders. And so a lot of cheating and infidelity, those are the men we work with. And it constantly pushes me back to face my own sexual shame. I don't want to. I don't want to talk about, you know, how I used and abused women when I was living in pornography and using, like, that sucks. And yet, for me to do my work well, I have to constantly look at my own face. I have to look at my own story. I have to humble myself. And so this work, if you're going to do it as a leader, it's like, you can't lead people as far as you've gone yourself. So will you push yourself? Will you humble yourself? Will you break? Will you discover, dig into your own misogyny?
Yeah.
Unconscious, conscious, whatever. Like, will you dig into, see the tentacles of patriarchy in what you do? And it's going to hurt, and it should hurt. And I truly believe there's no resurrection without crucifixion.
Yeah, because there's a way of trying to advocate for women where you center yourself and you become the hero of the story. You're the knight in shining armor. But what you're saying is, essentially, you're going to have to store up in your body what's lacking in the cross of Christ for women.
Yes.
Which means you're going to suffer.
Yes.
Your body is going to change.
Yes.
So exactly. You want to change things for women, you're going to have to change even more.
Yes. Totally. Totally. Yeah. And then again, it's not that martyr, you know, or, you know.
No, there's no patting on the back. It's just actually taking up your cross, right? It's just Christian discipleship.
You know, Mark Driscoll say, like, oh, I'm doing the work of God, you know. It's just like, no, you're just an abusive asshole. Like, there's difference. Like, this is not like, this great martyrdom. It's more just like, no, I think I need to do this to have integrity in my own life.
And now, a word from a sponsor.
Respero. Hey, we've talked about them before. They're an organization that offers faith-based counselor training. They believe that the aim of counseling is real transformation, not just symptom management or removal. Their counselor training courses equip you to help people to be great lovers of others, to understand why they do what they do, to be emotionally healthy, and to live out their identity as someone deeply loved and delighted in by God. All their training is rooted in the belief that Jesus is a source of life and that we can be a part of his work of healing and restoration.
And for pastors and ministry leaders, their training is a proven way to identify the people in your church who might be gifted for lay counseling. And it can be a powerful way to help make your church into a genuine healing community. They provide all the training and the supervision that allows your leaders to do great work and to free up pastoral staff from needing to do all the pastoral counseling in your church. If you are interested, you can go to respero.org, that's R-E-S-P-E-R-O.org, and click on the counselor training tab.
The Gravity Podcast is sponsored by the Gravity Formation Course, a 12-month cohort-based training in practical spiritual formation, where you'll learn to notice how God is already at work in your life so you can participate more fully in the life God shares with us. It's a discipleship process that goes beyond just gaining more knowledge and trying new practices. In the Gravity Formation Course, we go below the surface of our lives so that we can notice and name our deepest desires in God's presence, and to discern how God is at work in those desires to lead us towards holistic flourishing. More transformation, more life, more joy, more love. We've trained hundreds of people all over the world in this formation framework, and it has helped many people to have a sense of God at work in their lives, to learn how to be more at home in God's love. If you'd like to learn more, go to gravitycommons.com/formation.
All right, let's get back into our conversation.
Well, Christy, we're talking about this as two guys trying to reckon with our own imperfections for this stuff. Like, what are you hearing and what are you noticing? And what words do you have for, like, what words of, challenge or... or correction do you have about all this, if anything?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with what you're saying. I'm really grateful, Andrew, for your work, because I think very few people do that. And maybe I'm wrong, but at least my experience, I would say right now I'm in the healthiest work environment I have ever been in. And I'm really grateful that my co-pastors that I'm leading with are in counseling, are going after, like are honest about places that they see sexism, like kind of entangle their heart, right? And they're open about that. Most pastors and church leaders are not open about that.
No.
They just deny it. And and I do think, if I would say, maybe this is wrong, I would say for all of us, there are there's sexism in us that we need to keep on keeping on to get out. And so I guess that's what I would say. I think it's for men and for women. And it's sad. Even as you're talking, I can feel in my body, like holding things, right? And like, gosh, like I have done a lot of work in this. Yet there's still some work to be done. And for truth to be really not just believed in your head, but like embodied in my life.
Exactly. And so, as so much of the feedback we're getting from the book as well are women who've been hurt, and they're like, oh, like finally. I like feel known. I'm not being gaslit that this is, you know, this is just made up and this is just, you know, boys will be boys. It's like, no, this is a problem. And there's, you know, theological underpinning to the solution, Or the some of the real problematic scriptures that people weaponize, you know, to harm women and hurt women and put them in place. It's like, yeah, they're poorly translated. And there's explanation, right? We can talk about these scriptures. And then, of course, bad reading of scripture leads to problematic theologies and toxic teachings that then continue to harm women around submission and headship and authority and grace and forgiveness and modesty, purity, right? Marriage and divorce. Like, there's all these, you know, these problematic texts that have been misinterpreted lead to problematic theologies that run rampant. And the problem is, the victims are women because the men are holding the power.
Yeah, I'm actually consulting a church right now that there's a – I can't give a lot of details, but there is a woman who's been sexually abused, has sexual violence. At least this is my opinion, right? It has not gone to court. And the reality is, like, the people in leadership are like, well, you know, just excusing. And it feels like there is no accountability.
Zero. And that's what I call, I think in chapter seven, maybe six, weaponizing forgiveness. Right? And it happens over and over and over, pressuring victims to forgive quickly without proper grief or repentance of the perpetrator, right? Or misquoting Bible verses on grace and forgiveness to manipulate the victim into spiritually bypassing the abuse. Or getting the victim to forgive the abuser is more important than actually sitting in the harm that was caused, right? In a sense, you get a spiritual point as a pastor to like, oh, we got forgiveness. Like we got a point versus actually just sitting in the grief of the abuse, sitting in it and actually feeling it, right? Rather than just kind of checking off a box, we actually sit with and grieve, right? Where moving on becomes the highest priority rather than actually like heartache and sitting in it,
Well, I think most of our listeners want to be a part of a safe church. They want to be a part of a healthy community where people don't get hurt. And and I heard you say, you know, go after your own junk, dig in, go to counseling, work through that. But what other wisdom can you offer us about what we can do to kind of create that in our faith communities and in our communities alone?
We got to start. We got to start the conversation, right? We've got to start speaking up about it. We've got to, you know, and if your church isn't going to do it, like, okay, like if it's in you, if you feel passionate about this, like we got to start the conversation, whether it's simply book clubs in the church or, you know, talking to the leadership, like we've got to do that. You got to find trusted resources and study and discuss this stuff. right? There's so much bad resources out there in the Christian world. It's like, we've got to find trusted resources and then find your tribe. If it's not locally, like, find it online. You know, we've got, like, you don't have to be alone in this. And so many women, especially in rural areas, feel totally alone. They don't have a church to go to. So many women that I talk to are like, yeah, I don't go to church anymore. I love God more than ever. I love Jesus, but I cannot walk through those doors again. Or some have completely left the faith, and it makes sense. It's like, yes, that's just horrible what you suffered, right? And specifically for women, so much of their bodies and their intuition has been attacked, right? Your body's bad, or your body's just some sexual object that needs to be covered. And I would say the exact opposite, where no, God lives in your body, and you need to begin to trust your body. Trust your God-given intuition, right? So trust your gut, hold on to your power and trust it and step into your power rather than actually turning in and turning against yourself. I actually would say the exact opposite.
Yeah, that's good.
Andrew, your book again is called Safe Church, How to Guard Against Sexism and Abuse in Christian Communities. Before we say goodbye, I wonder if you could just take a moment to share a little bit about your work as the founder and director of the Christian Counseling Center for Sexual Health and Trauma.
Yeah. You know, you can find us at www.christiancc.org, and we run workshops, retreats for folks all over the world. Specifically, our kind of main niche is, and we say we, my wife is a professor, author as well. And so we work, I particularly work with men to help them outgrow destructive behaviors so that they can live courageous lives. And that's what we do. That's our main focus. And obviously that covers kind of a lot of stuff. But also, you know, we do get women that come are like trying to get help as well. So we do co-ed workshops, working on gender healing, gender wounds. And our most popular stuff is our men's work and helping men become more courageous and live with deeper integrity.
Well, so blessed that you wrote this book and you're doing the work you're doing. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me. Great meeting you all.
Say there, Ben and Christy.
Hey, we're still here.
I would like to offer a post-interview reflection.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Let's hear it.
Let me arrange my things.
I wonder if a church can ever be safe.
It's a good question.
Here's why I say that. We enter into very intimate, vulnerable promises and commitments when we are at church with each other that are pretty much unparalleled, I think, in our culture outside of maybe marriage and raising children. And anytime we are moving in those vulnerable, intimate, open spaces, and we're doing so with people that have wounds and hurts that they're not completely in charge of. I don't know if we can ever guarantee or expect not to find a lack of safety in some places at some times in most churches.
Yeah.
That's my wondering out loud. So it's not, anyway, what do you think about that?
I think that's fair. And part of that might be like, you might enter a church and hear people talk, like engage with people, hear a sermon, do what, like all the things. And one Sunday it might be fine and you feel fine. And then the next week, you could walk in and maybe it's a topic, maybe it's somebody, what somebody said, maybe I have no idea, but somehow you get triggered.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't feel safe.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, I guess that's true in life too, though, right? Not just church.
I mean, that's, Yeah, it is true. I think in life, and I think it partly depends on, you know, what we're meaning by safe. But I do think there are certain expectations that sometimes people have when you say safe, like that can't mean that I'll never be triggered here. You know what I mean? Just because that's just like relationships in, you know, we're broken people. We got broken systems. There's all kinds of brokenness and sin. So we're going to get triggered, you know, even within a relationship or a set of relationships that is maybe overall, quote unquote, safe. Like it's safer than, you know what I mean? Like there's explicitly abusive environments, and right. then there's like safer environments, but there's never I think your word guarantee, Matt, was the one. It was like, that I think is true, that we can never guarantee that it's always going to feel safe for everybody.
This is why, yes. And I think when we see something like safe church or safe marriage, mm-hmm. I keep coming back to this conversation I had several years ago with a trans woman. And at the time she was considering coming to our church, but our church was in a denomination that was a non-affirming denomination. And have I told you this story before? She asked me, would your church be safe for me? Mm-hmm. And I told her immediately in my brain, there was this little voice that went, it's a trap. You know? But what I ended up saying to her is, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. Not because we have an explicitly anti-trans weaponized vocabulary and posture, but I don't know how, I can't guarantee that every person you'll encounter at our church will treat you the way I would. And even if I could guarantee that, like even if I like went through all the people in my mind, Christy, yeah, she'll be fine. And Ben, yeah, he'll be fine. There's like, you sit next to two visitors mm-hmm. that I don't know that they're coming. And they give you signals or microaggressions of rejection or fear or hostility.
Yeah.
And then my church hasn't been safe.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you need for safety. Mm-hmm. Like, that's different for each of us, right? Yeah. So I think the word safe may set us up for failure.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think... Yeah, without you know, an asterisk or some sort of qualifications to say we're gonna do our best to, you know, to hold these things. But yeah, there's never a guarantee just because it's, you know, it's made up of people and visitors and all kinds of stuff. I remember another, you know, incident that happened in our church a while back where, you know, somebody in one of our small groups made a sort of I actually remember what it was, or I don't remember the details, but I remember it was just this sort of like casually racist comment.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't know that one of the people that was sort of like new to our community was in that room had, I think it was a black husband who wasn't there. And that, you know, that person never, they never made it back to our community just because of that one person's sort of casually, I mean, it surprised me. But it was like, oh gosh, I wish I could have, you know, said, hey, we don't all think that way. You know what I mean? Like all of that kind of stuff is just like,
yeah,
you know, it was, you know, heartbreaking in a way, but it is that kind of stuff happens, you know?
Well, maybe the answer to your friend, Matt, would have been, no, it's not going to be safe. Because the reality is like people are human and sinful and don't love well.
Yeah.
But you could say, but the posture of my heart and the hope of the posture of our church is loving. And so if somehow you feel unsafe, if you come and you're part of our community and there anything is said, would you please come mm-hmm. and be honest about that? Because that's mm-hmm. the only way we're going to learn how to love best and be a place that feels more safe to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different people need different things, you know?
Yeah.
To feel safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think our community, like I'm thinking about our church again. I don't think our church can feel safe for everybody because of, you know, just the makeup of our church, the denomination, like all kinds of other factors that are like, there's some people that just would never feel safe in our church.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I think maybe then, like, we've been playing around at our church with like the metaphor of a healthy immune system. Mm-hmm. So that there's this ecosystem of health that learns how to address invasions of dis-ease well.
That's good.
Versus we are a closed ecosystem that never gets sick.
Right.
Because I think the only mechanisms I have to create that kind of culture, we become a cult. Mm-hmm. It's a rigid, highly controlled, static, impermeable thing. And all of this is just reflecting on Andrew's project, which I'm fully behind, and wanting to implement like these practices of healing that then don't lead to more expectations that can't be met or that set us up to fail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think
that's a good... Go ahead, Christy.
Go ahead, Ben, because I was going to say something and wrap us up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, Christy, I'll let you wrap it up because I just wanted to say, I think that's a good metaphor, the immune system, because it doesn't mean, if I have a healthy immune system, it doesn't mean I never get sick. It just means that when I get sick, like I can deal with it pretty quickly and it's not catastrophic for my life. And you know what I mean? That kind of a thing. And so I wonder if that's a good metaphor for a safe church, you know, in the way that we're wanting to use that word to just say like, yeah, we're trying to build a healthy immune system here so that when things, you know, when we get triggered or when things, you know, go off the rails or when there's a conflict that is not easily resolvable, like we've got some antibodies here to help us move in the direction of health rather than just ignore it. Or, you know, push somebody away or, you know what I mean? Like some of those other instincts that it might be like, okay, let's learn not to do that. Let's learn to hold these things in tension. Let's learn to move towards health as best we can.
Yeah. Yeah. My, one of my dearest friends, was outside a couple weeks ago and her toes got really cold. And they were numb and she stayed outside for like 30 minutes after they were numb. Anyway, they hurt her for like a couple weeks and she like didn't go to the doctor. And finally she was like, okay, they still aren't like they're something's wrong. And she went to the doctor and they were like, you have frostbite, 3 toes on 1 foot and 2 toes on the other foot. And you need to go to a burn specialist and you need to pay attention to this and get medicine. And if you don't pay attention to this, you are going to lose your toes. And just this week, she went to like a burn specialist and they're like, it's kind of gross, but her toes are peeling and they're actually saying like the bad part is getting released, right? And like the health is coming from the inside out where blood is flowing and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, all of this to say, why am I bringing up this crazy story is because I think if we don't pay attention, if we ignore things and pretend like they're not a big deal, it will bring death. It will bring severing. And so we have to have other people point out. We got to bring other people in. You know, in this scenario, it's like doctors. But for churches, we got to bring other people to have accountability, to have voice, to have people point out things so that things don't get ignored. And I think you two do a fabulous job at pointing out and not ignoring and wanting and desiring wholeness and healing in a healthy environment. I've experienced it that even when you have messed up, you have come to me humbly and been like, teach me more, tell me more. I want to hear more from you. And so I guess I'm just saying I'm grateful. I believe you do that in your church. You certainly do that in this podcast and in my relationship with you. But I think it's a it's modeling for our listeners what it looks like to keep learning and to keep going after and to keep paying attention instead of ignoring things. So all that to say, instead of a joke, Matt, I just wanted to say, way to go. Way to go, Ben and Matt. I love you guys.
Thanks Christy. I think you have such a gift of encouragement.
You do.
Yeah.
She's a champion. Christy is a champion.
She is.
Of other people.
Yeah.
That's your superpower. Yeah. One of them. You know, all right, we probably should have sent it there, but I get a little uncomfortable because anytime I'm praised, I want to
just receive it. Receive it.
Sit down and receive
it. Sit down and receive it.
I don't think you fully see though all of Ben's weaknesses. And so it's important. No, we receive it. All right, listener. Thanks for being on this journey with us, listening to our interviews. And we appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
Peace.
See you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect there with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith and spirituality and whatever else comes up. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. Finally, we would love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, you can go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.